Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our weekly conversations include you. The phone lines are open. 941-3689 is a number from Oahu and from the neighbor islands. Or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Earlier this year, the Annie E. Casey Foundation told us there was a fundamental shift in the way juvenile justice was being dispensed. The U.S. youth incarceration rate was declining rapidly, according to the report. But the not-so-good news was that the U.S. still has the highest lockup rate of any nation in the industrialized world. The study ranked states based on percentage of change between 1997 and 2010, the latest figures used in that study. Tennessee experienced the most positive change with a decline of 66%. Hawaii had the least at 10%, but that was enviable to Idaho, which clocked an increase in the rate that that state put kids away. The report cited five trends in delivering the overall decrease. One of them is giving kids access to programs that work and not just more programs. Alex Munoz would know something about that. The L.A. filmmaker also works with incarcerated youth in his home state of California and since 2008 in Hawaii. His program teaches the basics of filmmaking, but it does more than that. It gives a viable outlet for locked-up youth to change the path of their lives. He's in town to teach 15 boys, and he joins us tonight, as does Kat Brady, coordinator of the Community Alliance on Prisons. She's also the legislative coordinator for the Hawaii Juvenile Justice Program. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you. Aloha. Pleasure to be here.
You've been here a couple of times. What, this is your fourth time back
Yes.
in Hawaii?
Yeah.
And it sort of surprised me that we've never had a chance to actually sit down and have a conversation about your program. And I know you've mentioned several other instances about why this is such a passion for you. Can you share that story?
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker, and I work in Los Angeles, and I've always believed in giving back to the community. The first movie I did was a film called Riot, which investigated the civil unrest following the Rodney King verdict. And we did this public screening at the First Amy Church, which is in South Central L.A. And the screening was radically just shut down by a group of community activists that came in and stormed the church and said, if you're going to come in here and make films about our history and about our people, you need to engage us and you need to hire us. We have all these unemployed young men and women, and you guys don't care. So they literally shut the screening down. And after the screening, I went up to them and I said, hey, that's not true that everyone in Hollywood doesn't care. I care. And they said, well, prove it. And I said, well, how? They said, go to Herman G. Stark, where they incarcerate the most violent youth offenders all across the country and teach a class about filmmaking. I said, okay. So fast forward to 2 days later, and I'm in Herman G. Stark. And I'm
2 days later you were there.
Yes. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So I enter this facility, and it's a classroom full of 25 young men, and they all have tattoos, and they're all clearly gang-affiliated. And I'm teaching this class, and I'm thinking, they really don't like this, and they're not into this, and they're not into me. So I stepped out, and I said, I'll be right back. Let's take a little water break. And I left, and I had set my really nice Oakley sunglasses on the chalkboard tray. And I left the classroom, and I came back, and my glasses were gone. And I said, hey, my sunglasses are gone, and I would like them back. And I said, I'm going to leave the room, and I'm not going to ask any questions, but I really would like to have my glasses back. So I came back, and two youth stood up and said, Mr. Munoz, we know where your sunglasses are, and you can have them back under one condition. And I said, what's that? They said, if you promise to come back and teach us more about filmmaking. And then I realized that, wow, these young men really need a creative outlet. And I said, that's not the way you negotiate in the real world, but I understand what you're saying. You're saying you want more film classes, but that's how FYI Film started, because I responded to a group of community activists who shut down a screening, and I was challenged to speak to youth at Herman G. Stark. And if these two young men, or however many it was, didn't take my sunglasses, I don't think I'd be here doing FYI Films.
And when you say FYI Films, Film for Youth Inside.
Yeah, FYI Films is Films by Youth Inside, and we focus on empowering and engaging incarcerated youth, which is a population that is invisible, misunderstood, underserved, and oftentimes neglected and misperceived by mainstream society. But the films we make help shift that. And this is why I do the work, and this is why I'm so impassioned. And I'm currently working with 15 incredibly talented, brilliant, intelligent young men at Hawaii Youth Correctional Facility. And when given the opportunity, they just rise to the occasion.
In doing what you've been doing for these several years now, how many have you been able to teach?
We've made over 58 short films with incarcerated youth in Los Angeles, Guam, and Hawaii, and we have engaged over 425 youth.
So for them to go from just being in the engagement process to actually making a film, what has to happen?
Well, you first have to really get them to trust you, because they really do not like the way they are represented in mainstream media. And the first thing they always say, whether it's Guam, Hawaii, or LA, is they say, we don't want to make some Hollywood crap, and we want to tell our stories our way, and they demand authenticity. So once I earn their trust, they begin to really open up, and a lot of them are subliterate. They aren't able to write, at their grade level. So I have them do movie posters and have them do storyboards, and they tell these stories that are amazing and rich, and they impact not only themselves, but lawmakers. We've screened the films for state legislators in Hawaii, in Guam, and also just in Sacramento and California.
The pictures that they draw and the way in which they're able to create their own stories, they're subliterate, how do you translate that into being able to come up with a real script, or is this unscripted?
We write a script, believe it or not. Oftentimes the POs at the LA County Probation Caps are in shock, because they said, I saw Leroy last night writing his script on a piece of paper. I've never seen him write anything since he's been here. So we use a lot of improvisation, and they understand things like protagonist, three-act structure, exposition, conflict, resolution. I invite you to come into my class and give them a quiz, and they'll pass, with flying colors. But this is a very specialized curriculum for this population. If they become intimidated by the task before him, they are often discouraged. So we start out with a movie poster, and then we discuss theme and what the protagonist wants and what the conflict is and what is the resolution. And we act out those things in our improvisations. And then we start taking dialogue from the improvisation. And I sit down with them and we type out these screenplays. But that's how it starts, all from a movie poster drawing.
Which is to say, they're not only getting a look at your industry, but they're also throwing up a mirror to look at themselves. What happens when they start to see this evolve in a picture of themselves that maybe they don't like?
Yeah, it's really, Bethann, it's really transformative. All the films that we have made with incarcerated youth have been short narrative films that are based on the youth's own personal or immediate history. And there's something about telling a story about a youth's own personal past. When they see it played out on a big screen, in L.A., we do the screenings at Sony, which sponsors us. So when they begin to see their own lives play out authentically and honestly on a big screen, they realize, hey, I matter. I occupy a place in this world, and my existence is legitimate. And, oh, this is what I'm up against. It helps shift their perspective on who they are. They begin to think critically about themselves. And I'm not a psychotherapist, but when they make films about their past, it renders the past unrepeatable. We have one kid who realized he was a really good actor. He'd been incarcerated every year from the age of 12 to 18.
Wait, from 12 to 18,
yes,
every single year?
Yes, once a year in L.A. County. Discovered he was a good actor, never incarcerated again, going to UCLA, a working actor, and also on our board of directors. That's how transformative, if you make the effort to engage these kids, that's how transformative programming could be.
Kat, I want to get you in on this conversation, because when you hear the story of one kid, albeit a kid in L.A., it doesn't matter. It's a way of saying that it can happen, and it can happen anywhere, and it takes one more kid out of the system, puts him back into being a productive citizen, hopefully. This sort of becomes the poster child for some of the programs that you've been pushing for us to have in Hawaii.
Well, this is really something that develops, and thank you for having me. This really develops self-esteem. And I love the way Alex put it, that they really see themselves, they see their lives, and they realize they have a place in the world. And I think that's one of the problems. A lot of these kids feel like they don't matter. They have no voice, or that nobody really cares what they have to say. The films are so incredible. I've seen probably all of them now. And they are tear-jerking. They're amazing because they're really real. And Alex has, he tells them, no violence, no cursing, and no things that are negative about women.
Right.
And the kids have challenged him on that and said, we want a real story. We want to tell our stories. And sometimes we use bad language. And we want to be able to do that.
And you, I mean, you see people doing it on cable all the time for the reason we want it to be as real as possible. So how do you negotiate with the kids when they're trying to give you a real story and maybe show some of these attitudes which are really unsavory?
Yeah, well, we don't like to censor them, and so we give them roles. And if they want to use the easy F word, we say, can you come up with something else besides that? And if you challenge that, they actually will be even more creative. They have a really their own unique language. I think the other important thing about the work they do is it's in a way a form of community service, because not only are they affected and impacted by writing and acting in and directing a short film with professional actors, but they also impact the family members. There are two boys 2 years ago who wrote a film about a young 16-year-old boy whose mother was addicted to crystal meth. And one of the boys said, hey, Munoz, this is a film about Julio's mom, but don't tell him because he's embarrassed. And the next day, Julio came up to me and said, hey, Munoz, this story is about Anthony's mom, but he doesn't want anyone to know, so don't tell him. So we did this film about a mother of a 16-year-old boy who's struggling with her addiction to crystal meth. And by the end of the film, she's in rehab and everything's happy, which to me is an indication that they all want to live happy, productive lives. They invited their mothers to the screening at Sony. And I said, okay, if you invite your mothers to the screening of this film, you got to let them know what's going on, because they can be ashamed. They can become very angry. They can be really embarrassed. And you can't do this to them. You can't put them in the line of fire. Both mothers came to the screening. And within 48 hours, both mothers went to rehab. It took a film that their sons made to make them realize that my son needs me. And it was such a powerful thing. And that's when I realized that, wow, this work is deep and meaningful and impactful. And these kids have the courage to tell the story.
What's the epilogue to that story, though? Because to say I'm going to go off to rehab is one thing. To be able to actually carry it through and stay clean and stay present and be a mom takes a lot of work, a lot of focus, and having the wherewithal to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most difficult things is, you know, when working with the youth is you really bond with them because they are so open and honest about their own challenges in life and the trauma they've been through. And so you make these great films, and then they have this great moment of triumph when they see their films, and they really are transformed. But then when the program is over, it sounds really cruel, but it's like watching a blind man cross a busy boulevard, because you just hope that they won't make a misstep. So that's something we're working on as our program, like post-programming engagement. In L.A., we've been successful because we help put the youth in jobs training programs, Hollywood CPR, Workplace Hollywood, the Bill Cosby Institute Film Workshop, and that's what we're working on right now in Hawaii. Like, how do we continue to engage these kids so they stay on that new trajectory after they've complete the workshop?
If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking with filmmaker Alex Munoz about his program in Guam, Hawaii, and California to keep incarcerated youth in a better pattern for their lives that the jail just doesn't offer. They make films, they look at their lives, and very often choose to be something other than a kid who comes back to jail. 941-3689 is our number. If you'd like to join the conversation, or 877-941-3689. Kat Brady is here, too. You know her well from all of her work in prison reform. And we're looking at, how do we serve kids who get mixed up with the law and how do we keep them from coming back? One of the programs that we're talking about tonight is Alex's, to help the kids make films and take a look at their lives by seeing a very big mirror up on the screen. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What does this cost for you to do all of this?
It's about $15,000 each workshop. So I think that's a fair amount of money, I mean, compared to what it costs to incarcerate a young person. So you're looking at $1,000 per student to engage youth. And we did a tracking program in California from 2005 to 2008 in which we found out that while the California recidivism rate for incarcerated youth hovers close to 60%, the youth who went through our program, the recidivism rate fell below 10%. And we're working on longer, tracking programs to see how effective we are. But we're in demand. We have Arizona interested in the program, New York, Mississippi, Missouri, Alaska, but we're trying to raise more money. But I want to say one thing, and that is this. I love working at Hawaii Youth Correctional Facility because the staff is tremendously helpful, and because this is my fourth time, they really support the program. And I think without the staff there, I wouldn't be able to be effective as someone running a program. And also David Hipp has been extraordinarily helpful. Some Hawaii state officials saw a film I did, the first FYI Films workshop I did in Guam, and said, we'd like you to do it here. And so that's why I'm here, and this is my fourth workshop. But I really like working here in Hawaii because the staff there really understands that we're there to help the youth.
And in the time that you've been working with youth there, what has the staff told you about the kids who have been involved? Do they see them come back?
No. Thankfully, I mean, there are stories of youth coming back, but for the most part, they're out and they have stayed out.
So looking to you, Kat, on this one, because for a very long time, you've made the case that it's much easier to do some, small work with kids that may cost $1,000 in this case per kid than to have to incarcerate a kid for long periods of time and possibly have that kid get in the system and stay in this system.
Yes.
So if we know that this works, why don't we do this more? Why doesn't something like this become more the norm than the exception?
Well, I guess because change is difficult, number one. And several years ago, I asked several family court judges, so if money was no object, what would you do with most of the kids who come before your bench? And they said, we would send them to community programs if there were any. And that is the huge problem. I had a talk recently with Judge Browning, who's the head of family court in Hawaii. And he said, every year about 5,000 kids come to the court. About 60% have mental health problems, and about 80% have substance abuse problems. There is only one substance abuse program, residential, for kids in the First Circuit, and that's the Bobby Benson Center. So when we know that 80% of the kids are struggling, and many come from, intergenerational drug use, why don't we have more drug
programs?
Well,
doesn't that mean it's on us to be able to do that? Because surely the kids can't do it. The families can't do it.
Yes, and this is something we've been saying for years because it costs $300,000 a year to incarcerate a child. And if most of the kids are, status offenders, runaways, truants, what are we doing? We're just greasing the pipeline to the adult prison. So I sit on the Disproportionate Minority Contact Committee and for juvenile justice. And, most of our kids are Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders, and most of the kids are not violent. And we should be doing, creating a whole host of community programs that would actually address their needs. A lot of these kids, like Alex said, they don't feel like they fit anywhere. They feel, kind of lost. And as adults, it's really up to us to figure out, to help them, to ask them, what is it you need, and to help them figure out how to get that.
So let's ask you that question. We're talking about $300,000 to incarcerate versus $1,000 for a program that is demonstrably helpful in keeping kids from coming back into the system. Should we do more of this, and would you support it? 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. A lot of you are parents. The chances of having a kid having a little mix-up might be in their future, but regardless, what is it that we owe kids who do get mixed up and are on the wrong side of the law for a little bit, especially if they're status offenders? What do we do for them that we're not doing now? Would you support a program like Alex's that might cost $1,000 per kid versus hundreds of thousands to keep them incarcerated? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I mean, we should point out that we're not talking about hundreds and hundreds of kids even throughout the state. The figures I saw in the Annie Casey report, which came out, as you know, in February, showed us with about 120, but that was as of year 2010. Yeah. Now it's been decreasing.
The population at HYCF has really decreased, and that's really good because there's this huge alternative movement around the country that's really trying to keep kids out of incarceration, because we know once you grease that pipeline, it really makes it easy for them to end up in the adult system. And I've spoken to women who actually were in in the girls' side of HYCF, and then became incarcerated in the adult side. And I asked them, so how was that? And they said, oh, it was kind of like going home. I knew everybody. Now, that's not what we want to happen.
That's not the kind of homecoming we'd like to see
happen.
That
is not what we want to see. But there are more and more programs that are coming up in the community that are helping kids. One is, I'm on the board of a group called Opio Haku Mo'olelo, Youth Writing Stories, Youth Making Meanings. And this is a group that's started by Brian Bilski, who's a PhD candidate at UH. And he's got a group of slam poets who go into the detention home, which is now in Kapolei, and they teach the kids, and they help the kids express themselves through poetry or writing prose or whatever. And another program is called Making Media That Matters, and that's a program for girls, and it's run by Vera Zambanelli, who's also a PhD candidate at UH.
And we were hoping to have her with us tonight, but she's
on her way to Italy. So, but that's a great program. And all of these things, I mean, we need hundreds of programs like this that make kids realize that they have a voice and we care about what they have
to say.
And
the price point on some of these programs are similar to what Alex's?
Yeah, well, they're both of the programs I mentioned are grant funded, as is Alex's. And to me, these are things that the state must fund, because if we really are earnest about keeping kids out of incarceration, then we better create a whole bunch of programs that will help them stay out.
Because we're going to fund it one way or the other.
That's right.
Several of you are on the line now. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number, 877-941-3689. Going to Sean, calling us from Waikoloa. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
No problem. Yeah, actually, it's kind of interesting you guys are doing this topic, because my first job, I've been with the state of Hawaii for 12 years as a social worker or human professional specialist, and my first job was actually as a mental health specialist through the Family Court Liaison Branch at HYCF back in 2001. Prior to that, I was with Brown Schools when they came out and tried to do a program for girls, and you know, some of the issues I saw, and I know it's 12 years later, and I'm hoping that a lot of these are being addressed these days, is first was there was this sort of a xenophobic attitude of if anybody from the mainland came in with an idea that could work for, you know, the kids, there was this fear of, you know, kind of attitude of, oh, here comes the Howleys trying to tell us how to do things. And so we had a lot of resistance, and unfortunately the program failed. And so when I came over to DOH Candy and was working with the kids, I had a case of up to like 80 or 90 kids. I worked with boys and girls, did group and individual. We did life skills classes. We did a lot of stuff there. But the main issue I saw was there was this real strong attitude of a lot of the white CEOs there, you know, the youth correctional officers, that these kids are a waste, they're punks. I mean, I actually heard comments like, you know, them calling them animals, they're criminals, they're no good. things like this. And so, you know, these kids, they're there 24 hours a day around this kind of thing. And surprisingly, when they would get out, you know, we'd have the same ones, you know, we'd have a lot of success. They'd go out. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, there's that revolving door. They'd come back. And I remember one, you know, one girl asked one time, you know, what is, she returned like five times in a row. I asked her, what is the story going on here with you? She said, this is the only place I have any stability. I go home and, you know.
And that's worth talking about, you know, for a second there, Sean. So forgive me for interrupting you, but I want to talk a little bit about that, because the sense of being incarcerated and having that be the only stability that a kid experiences, I mean, it's just horrifying.
It is, and actually I'm happy to say HYCF has changed, because that definitely was the attitude. And even some of the family court judges, you know, and police felt like, oh, here's this kid again, what a pain in the neck, I'm just going to throw the kid, lock the kid away. Well, you know, we know that doesn't work. You wouldn't do that with your child. You know, you'd give the kid a timeout. You'd try to explain what's going on, to find out what's going on with them and help them negotiate their way through whatever conflicts they're having. So locking kids away never worked. Right now, I think HYCF is in a better state. They're really looking to expand their contracting to bring in more programs that actually can address the needs of the kids in many different ways, from job skills development to, you know, giving them voice. There's many things that we can do, and lots of things are happening now, but this is recent.
Well, you know, that's probably very good news to Sean. Sean, thanks very much for the call. Going now to
thank you, Sean.
Frank, calling us from Salt Lake. Aloha, Frank. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. Good afternoon. I had a quick question concerning the case in the mainland in Texas where a kid got off of going to jail for claiming affluenza, where he doesn't know right from wrong. What do you think about that?
You know, I just saw that briefly this morning on the internet, but I didn't have chance to read it. But I can't really comment on it because I don't really know the background of it. But it's sort of saying
like your parent, he got off because his parents didn't teach him right from wrong because he's too rich and he doesn't think of, you know, this doesn't apply to me, the law doesn't apply to me, which is everyone who breaks the law. And a lot of kids could claim affluenza. But
a lot of the kids that you see, though.
20 months in a nice facility in Malibu in rehab.
Yeah, but Frank, I think you're talking about, you know, a case that doesn't sync with what it is that we see here by and large in Hawaii. Would that be true, Kat?
Yeah, those really aren't the kids that we see. We see kids.
Describe the kids that you see.
The kids that we see come from generally lower income families that are struggling. Many families are struggling with intergenerational drug use. These kids, in many cases, have no role models. So to have somebody like Alex come in, Alex is a person of color, a successful filmmaker from L.A. They look at Alex and they're like, wow, that could be me. And I think he's showing them, he's opening up the world to them. That is what is crucial, to really show the kids possibilities. You can be this.
Well, I mean, if we were talking about any other just average kid in a school, we'd be having that very same conversation.
Yes.
Yet because in past years, when we talk about kids who are incarcerated, they become marginalized to where they're not even kids anymore. They're just faces, numbers, bodies, but not really a mind that needs to be opened.
But they are children. And the reason why I choose to work with this population is because these are children. Their relationship to crime is not chronic, and their minds are incredibly moldable and shapeable. Did you know that after the first class at HYCF last Monday, I had six youth of the 15 say to the side, they call me a Lecky. They said, Aleki, do you think you can help me like get a job in the film industry? Or, hey, Aleki, do you think you can help me get into film school and like write me a letter of recommendation? And today was the first day we had professionals come in and make their films. Every youth in my class shook hands with the professionals and said, hey, can I keep in touch with you? Because I want to work when I get out of here. I really like this filmmaking stuff. So not only is there a need for programming, but the youth don't want it. They crave it.
Yes.
And they really need it. They need some type of an outlet. That's six students after 1 hour and a half class saying, do you think you can help me, like, hook me up with someone, get a job, or...
And whether that really happens or not, whether they wind up in the film industry or not, your point is they suddenly see that there can be a future doing something else, being someone else.
Right. And it's FYI is not about, oh, we want you to work in the film industry. It's about telling your story and understanding that you matter and your perspective matters. These films certainly broaden the forum for a perspective. And also when judges see them, they say to me, wow, I did not know that these kids are up against these odds. And I see them differently now when they step up to my bench.
Yes.
And that's a powerful thing. But it's amazing to me how mainstream society seems to not want to deal with this problem. They're children, and they want to live happy, productive lives, and they want to contribute as productive members of society in their community and also in their family. You know, they all say, I want a good job because I want to help my family up.
We've got lots of callers on the line. Alex, Kat, we're going to go to them. If you want to get in on this conversation, and we hope you do, 941-3689 is our number. If you're on Oahu, use that one, or 877-941-3689. If you call us from the Neighbor Islands, or if you're somewhere else and listening to the live stream, you can get to us on that number, too. Going to Matthew, calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, Matthew. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I just wanted to say hafade to Alex and aloha and commend him on the wonderful work that he's doing with kids. I come from a background of being an educator as well as previously a filmmaker of sorts, and I realize the importance of being able to tell one's story, and for these students to have that opportunity and be able to, you know, I think for a long time they have been a group of people that maybe have not had access to being able to tell their story, and to have someone come in and give them that opportunity, I think says a lot for your commitment to this group and also for your brilliance in bringing this kind of reformative programming to kids. And, you know, I'll just mention one more thing that I saw on a bumper sticker once, that education may cost a lot, but you should see how much incarceration costs, and
wow,
something to that effect. And yeah, and I just can't commend you more on this idea that it getting this on the front end and having kids feel good about themselves helps the community so much. And I just wanted to applaud your efforts.
Oh,
Matthew,
thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Going now to who do we have next? We've got Sterling calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Sterling. Thanks for your patience.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi. I'm a parent of two, and just wanted to comment that in terms of a program like this, luckily my kids are not in any of this type of situation, but, you know, life happens and you never know, you know. Any program that provides kids opportunities and anything that can save us money as a state, I think is kind of a good idea. And so I applaud your efforts, and thank you very much.
Now, amid all the applause that you've just gotten over the last little while, though, the question is, what are you going to do about making sure, if you feel this way, that other people know about it?
Does he have a website?
Yes, FYIfilms.org. And, you know, one of the most exciting things is, you know, Sony provides cameras for the youth, and we just got six new cameras shipped over to HYCF. And the moment that we place these video cameras in the hands of the youth, it's like watching fifth graders during the first minute of recess. And you know what they do? The very first thing they do when the youth get the camera, whether they're on Guam or Hawaii or L.A., is they aim back at the surveillance cameras because they understand they're objects of surveillance. So they kind of turn the tables and control the apparatus. But they immediately slide into this documentary film mode, and they begin to interview each other. And it's this combination of therapy, confession, rap, and spoken word. But it's all about their stories. And one of the greatest things is after the class is looking at this footage, because we just say, take the cameras, you have 10 minutes to do whatever you want. And it's all about their personal stories. And it's so raw and real and incredibly therapeutic. It is so powerful for a young person to hold a video camera for the first time and look at each other and interview each other. It's really inspiring, you know.
There are other projects. I'm thinking about Project Focus that was working with kids who have had troubles in their lives for, in a great many ways, and give them still cameras and allow them to take a portrait of someone in their lives that they really care for, who's made an impact, and also have a picture of them taken professionally. That's of the same thing, finding a way of being able to look through a lens and seeing how your life looks when you see it that way, and what view other people see in looking at you that maybe you don't necessarily know about. But the point is, whether it's Alex's program, forgive me, or another program, having something that seemingly is available to open up a child's perception and hopefully allow him or her to feel a greater sense of self-esteem is really what this is all centered on.
Yes, and it's really about putting kids on a track that they can reach their fullest potential, where you open up the world to them and they can see, wow, I can do that, or I can do that, or I'm interested in that. And to have adults that can actually help them navigate that road is really, really crucial. So this is, you know, most people never get the chance to see their lives objectively.
Well, right? Well, few of us could really be objective anyway.
Our lives, right?
And, correct.
And once you see your life up on the screen, sometimes it can make you cringe.
Well, and in this case, that's exactly what he's hoping for. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Those are our numbers. The first one if you're on Oahu, and the second one if you are someplace else, including the neighbor islands, call us at 877-941-3689. Do we spend a little bit of money to get him into a program? Or do we have to spend a lot of money to keep them incarcerated? Well, you know, logic would say you want to spend a little money, but the little money has to be with a program that really works. This one seems to have demonstrated that it does work. Kat Brady's point is we need more of them to deal with the relatively few kids we have who are incarcerated. We're talking about under 120 kids. This is not huge. Why would we even think about trying to just simply incarcerate a kid as opposed to getting him in a program? Is there a case, Kat, where we should be really thinking that this kid has to be incarcerated?
Well, there are some kids who, and a very, very small number, who have committed heinous crimes. But, you know, the research is emerging in the last several years that shows that a child's brain doesn't develop fully, in some cases, until they're 25. So kids make very impulsive decisions without really thinking of the consequences.
Yeah, you're talking about some of the newer brain research that we've seen.
Yeah. And I can say as a kid, I did things that I know my mom would cringe if she ever knew that I was doing those things. But, you know, I remember I grew up on the East Coast riding my sled down a hill, standing up because I was so cool, and right into a road that was heavily trafficked. But did I ever think about the traffic coming? No, I thought I was so cool because I was a girl and I could actually stand up on my sled. And I'm sure my mom would have had a heart attack if she ever saw that. So I wasn't thinking about the consequences. So we know that kids don't really think about the consequences. They think about the immediate. So, you know, Hawaii was at one point, we were like one of the premier states for juvenile justice, and we fell, you know, sadly behind.
The point of it is, though, that at least according to the Annie and Casey Foundation's report from early in the year, we're making some strides.
We are. We're doing a heck of a lot better, and I'm really, really pleased to see that. And I hope HYCF has, you know, under 20 kids at one point.
All right, let's take some more phone calls. Going now to Sonia, calling us from Paoa. Aloha, Sonia. Thank you for your patience.
Hi there. I'm just calling in because I'm a social worker who works with adults who are dual diagnosis, access one mental illness, and also substance abuse. And, you know, most of my clients are people who didn't get to learn good coping skills and didn't get strong parenting growing up, and so have become part of this, you know, continuous cycle of incarceration, rehab, relapse, do it all over again. And I just think it's so important what you're doing to, intervene now and be teaching these coping skills, and I'm a big proponent of experiential therapy. It's something that I incorporate in my own practice. So just, you know, hats off to you. I'm really excited to hear about your program.
Thanks very much for the call, Sonia. Going now to Bea calling us from Kona. Aloha, Bea. Thanks for your call.
Aloha.
Hi there.
We're all representing the Big Island here. I want to ditto the lady from Pahoa because I want to thank you folks and much mahalo for what you're doing there. You know, everybody needs to understand that here on the islands, I mean, I have 420-somethings that were born and raised here in the islands, and you have a unique situation. You know, I mean, typically everyone's going to think, oh, paradise and whatnot. You know, there's a lot of these folks, like the lady from Pahoa said, they had weak parenting. There's a language barrier when the kids are first coming to school, and that continues on. You know, and then, too, I mean, what is the option when you grow up? You're going to work in the tourism industry, which here on the Big Island, you know, we have quite a bit more diversification, and we're getting better on that. But for the kids to have an open mind, I mean, they're our future, and letting them speak and letting them, you know, incorporate these thoughts that they have will actually help all of us in the future.
So, Bea, I really want to
thank you, folks.
I mean, a lot of people have been calling to give lots of applause and appreciation for what you're doing, Alex, and all of that is well deserved and well earned. The question is, though, how do we push for the agenda if this is what you think should happen? What are you willing to do if you see that this is such an important thing? I mean, it's kind of easy to call up and say, good for you, onward. But Alex is going to get on a plane around Christmas time and go back to California. And
right.
Meanwhile, there are going to be kids
in
here.
I'm going to sound a little bit biased. I'm going to sound a little bit partial. But let's not fund the tourism industry as much as we fund us.
Well, Kat Brady is nodding on that one. Thanks very much for the call, Bea.
Good suggestion, because I really believe that the budget, the state budget, is a moral document. Policy can say anything. The budget is what they do with our money. So if we want our money to be spent to help these youth develop to their fullest potential, then we have to fund that. And we have to figure out how to fund that. An audit just came out of the Hawaii Tourism Authority, was done of the Hawaii Tourism Authority, and it was in the paper today showing that their record keeping is kind of sloppy. So they get, you know,
okay, but let's just talk
bucks.
About some real money here.
That is real money.
No, I'm talking about real dollars looking at Alex's program. If you tell me that it's about $1,000 per kid to go through the program, and we say, let's ballpark it at 120 kids, let's use the numbers from 2010, that's $120,000. Now, as money and budget items go, that's not huge.
Nope. It isn't huge, but $300,000 a year to incarcerate one youth, that's huge.
Times 120.
Yeah. And we could be doing a lot more of these programs and programs like this also in the community so that we could have fewer kids who are actually locked up and more kids engaged in more programming in the community that interests them.
Right. And some of that was also in the 5 points that the Annie Casey Foundation made, is that these kids don't need to be locked up. They need to be someplace that's safe, someplace where they can access programs, but it doesn't have to be a jail. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you'd like to get in on this conversation, you still have some time. Going to Michael, calling us from Eva Beach.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. You know what? It's all about show me the money, like you guys were just saying about the money, right? So if it costs $300,000 to incarcerate a youth per year, right, I mean, why would the state, and this is a big industry, right? I know at least with adult correctional facilities, it's a multi-million dollar industry, right? There's a lot of money coming in. So if that is the case with youth correctional facilities as well, why would the state resolve it? I mean, $300,000 per child, that's a lot of money. Right? So
I'm watching Kat smile and nod as if, you know, somehow the logic of all of this has just gone by a lot of us. Why is it that we don't seem to talk about it in these terms, Kat?
Well, I think one of the problems is that there aren't programs in the community, and judges feel like they have no recourse. To me, I think the judiciary has to step up and say we have too many kids coming before the court and we need to do something better. That kind of push by the judiciary would definitely have an impact on the legislature. Right now, there's just not enough. There are a few things popping up here and there, but we have a lot of kids who need some direction. And we could be doing more things like this if we could get the legislature to understand that diverting, reinvesting that money into community programs would be way more effective.
Well, I mean, but just looking at sort of the balance of all of this, if we're talking 120 kids or less, or fewer than 120, and you look at that and say, okay, that could be maybe four classrooms in a public school, and we would have no problem talking about something that four classrooms worth of kids might need. Is there some sort of barrier when it comes to talking about kids who need really bona fide programs that we know work to keep them from getting back into the prison system?
Well, it's this bit about people who get into trouble, they're the other, and we are very good at creating them as the other rather than as part of us. And I always like to say in Hawaii, it's a kakou thing. It's about us. It's never about me. It's never about you. It's about all of us. And I think we have to adopt that philosophy. Everyone has to embrace that because we have the same problems in the adult system. Oh, they're the other. It's not me. It's them. It's
but
oh,
these are kids.
Yeah,
these kids
who come from bad parents, so we can push them aside. No, we cannot. They're all ours.
We're going to take some more callers. If you want to join us, 941-3689. Do it soon. 877-941-3689. Going to Marty, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Marty. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you so much. I have a question. I think Alex mentioned that it was $1,500 per child to go through this program. Is that correct?
About $1,000.
$1,000. Okay, versus $300,000. And yes, we kudos to Alex, and it's great, and yes, but where is the money going to come from? And my question is, though, can the judge say, okay, you know what, we're going to put this child who's just committed whatever they've committed into, instead of incarcerating him, no, we're going to send him to this program instead. Is that even a possibility to do?
We would have to develop those programs. There are some programs in the community, and Alex's program isn't a residential program. It's a program that teaches filmmaking and storytelling to kids.
So the children have to be incarcerated in order to go to his program, correct?
And what we're saying is that we should be having these kinds of programs all throughout the community so we can divert kids from incarceration into programs that would address their needs like substance abuse or mental health issues and have programs like Alex's in those programs.
Okay, which I completely agree with. I guess logistically is, yes, how did it make this work? I mean, we can't even get our elementary schools or, you know, our public school systems to work. And that's for, you know, the general population, how to make this work. But can I ask Alex, is he able to show these films to the public? Could they start raising money just that way, show these films and have people pay to see these films and then...
I'm not able to show them publicly because of the identity of the minors. However, I can hold private screenings if it's for educational purposes or to inform legislators or if it's a private event to raise money. But I can't show them publicly because of my MOU with the state of Hawaii. But look, get me your email and I'll make sure you get to see the next film they're making. We'll be screening it sometime in February. And we as an organization want to engage youth. The population of incarcerated youth is it's such a special subset of needs, but we're looking to expand to be more prevention and work with youth before they get incarcerated as well.
Yeah,
so I totally understand what you're saying about
question,
that.
Because coming, I've worked with elementary school children. I'm a teacher, but you can, I mean, not, it's not a given a science, but you can pick out a lot of these kids from a very early age. And pretty much guess where they might end up.
I've had teachers tell me, and some of the research suggesting, first and second grade.
Yeah, and it's they're in all neighborhoods, everywhere, all walks of life. And, yeah, I mean, you can trace it to the parents. And, you know, you would like to pluck this child out early and try to get him into a program that would work. And it's not, I mean, obviously film is a program that appeals to any youth, especially in today's day and age. I mean, if you mentioned it to my three kids, hey, we're going to send you to film school, I think that I'll jump on that. Am I going to be like, oh, my gosh, yes, you know, let's do this. I mean, and I think that might be one of the greatest appeals to these kids. But, I even cooking or things that just are highly sought.
Well, you're certainly getting a nod over here from Kat, who has been saying all along that we need to have programs that really increase a child's ability to see the world creatively and access his or her own ability to be creative. And that seems to be the common factor among many of these programs, whether it's writing or, as you were suggesting, cooking or anything else. All right. Okay. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation while we can still have one, now's the time to call. We're talking about programs to creatively support kids who have been incarcerated, and we are talking about kids. We are talking about youth, generally, what, between 12 and 18?
19.
And 19. So one more year to be considered a youth. That's a very different thing, because for a lot of people, 18 seems to be...
Yeah, but kids are allowed to stay at HYCF until they're 19.
At this point, if you had your very best druthers about what we might actually be able to accomplish in the next legislative session relative to bringing programs like Alex's in, what do you think is feasible?
Well, right now there's a big initiative going on with the Pew Foundation, and they're looking at kids who are incarcerated and, you know, what we can do. And I think there's going to be legislation. And tomorrow there's a meeting actually at 10 a.m. in room 329 of the Capitol, where they're going to present their findings from several months of work in analyzing data. So there's plenty of things that we can do. And what the community can do is come in and support that legislation. And if you're interested in knowing what that is, anyone can email me at kat.cap. That's Charlie Apple Pear, Hawaii, H-I, at gmail.com.
I mean, the point that you're making is that it's all fine and well to be supportive of it when you're calling up on a radio show, but if you really have an interest in this and you'd like to do something, you can. Right now, we're going to go to a caller who's been waiting, Mike, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to Town Square. I'm sorry, Mickey from Honolulu.
Aloha, Beth Ann. There are a lot of people who would be very, very interested. I'm a storyteller. I like to create stories that include cultural icons that teach core curriculum. And our children get very much involved in it. And since a vast majority of our children, you know, tend to be from, disenfranchised homes, we need to include them. And we need to include their stories and how we teach.
Well, that's kind of the whole point of what we've been hearing tonight, that the fact is that we are such a storytelling culture, and it's been such an ingrained way of being in Hawaii that this seems to be a really good matchup. Thanks very much for the call. Going
now
to...
Oh, and...
You have a question?
To leave my email, because I'd love to be a part of this and
okay.
to be able to help. It's one of the things I do.
All right. Well, we've had a couple of those situations happen. I've just been told that some people have been calling up and been a little frustrated that we couldn't get through everyone. Sometimes that's how it goes, guys. But if you are calling to ask about contact information, call us, or you can just email talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, and we'll put you on to Alex or to Kat about other programs. If you have an interest in being involved with us with this, that's the way you can get more information, and you won't have to just call us right now. But as you look at the completion of this program, Alex, I mean, here you are, you've been working with the kids for a little while, you're going to go home in about a week's time, and then you may or may not be back to Hawaii for a little while. What will happen in your absence?
Well, I'm training a group of young emerging filmmakers in the community, and I want FYI Films to continue even during my absence. I'm shooting a feature film next year, and I want to build it as a local program so that it's run by local filmmakers. I formed a Hawaii advisory board, and we're working on expanding our community partners. For those of you who want information, we're on Facebook if you want to go to FYI Films. But something that's really heavy on my heart is the children are our future. I see the brilliance in the eyes of these young men I'm working with at HYCF. Who's to say one of them isn't the next Nelson Mandela?
Well, you never know where brilliance is going to come from.
That's yeah. Right. Who's to say one of them is not going to invent the next great green technology? Who's to say one of them is going to be a great scientist and engineer for NASA? They deserve the opportunity. They really do. And they need to be engaged and they need to be challenged. I want to tell you this one story at Herman G. Stark where there was a conflict between the black and Latino youth, and they were spraying mace all over the place, and the kids were getting arrested, and it was an all-out conflict. They went to every classroom and, you know, were detaining children, and when they got to the film classroom, they saw black and Latino youth changing a light. They saw black and Latino youth reloading a camera. They saw a black and Cambodian and Samoan youth doing the storyboards because they were so engaged that they're impervious to the violence around them. And that's the type of engagement that this population needs.
Yes. When you come back again, if we could kind of look in a crystal ball for just a second, and although you may not be directing the program in Hawaii, what is it that would make this be even more successful for you?
If every single youth that went through the program either went to Academy of Creative Media at U of H or got into some film school or entered the workforce as in film production or even was inspired to become a writer and got on the right track to live a happy and productive and fulfilling life.
And how would you measure that?
Well, I'm going to be speaking with some people from University of Hawaii to really track it. I'm committed to enhancing and empowering the well-being of incarcerated youth here in Hawaii, and I'm looking to creating FYI Films as a sustainable. We have put aside money from our last grant to offer FYI Films over the next 3 years, but I want to give it over to the locals and let them run it and let them take it over. And I believe that we have an emerging young filmmaking population that is passionate about social, economic, and educational justice, cares about the youth, and understands the power of filmmaking. And I'm looking forward to seeing the trajectory of FYI Films Hawaii. And I'll be here for the screening, and I'll be here to lead the next workshop, but I just won't be able to run every workshop from here on out.
All that said, the point about having data collection and having it done in a way where you can really demonstrate what's happening, that's got to be looked at too. And that may not be the same group of people that you're talking about to be able to teach this. So you may have a lot more on your hands than what you think.
Yeah, but I'm up for the challenge. And listen, I tried to get into HYCF in 2005. It took me 2 years. And now I call David Hepp at DHS and he said, sure, when do you want to do a workshop? So there are big improvements going on, I feel.
Yes.
Alex Munoz, thank you so much for being here. Good luck.
Thank you.
And we will be checking in with you.
Thank you. Mahalo.
And Kat Brady, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I told you you'd love him.
And I think a lot of people did, actually.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining us tonight for Town Square. I will see you tomorrow morning at 8 right here for The Conversation. Meantime, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.